This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. Few actresses command attention like Regina King. She's been in the business for decades, from stealing scenes in movies like Boys in the Hood.
Hoes gotta eat too.
Wait a minute, who you calling a hoe? I ain't no hoe.
And Jerry Maguire.
Jerry, this is humiliating, and I'm pregnant, and I'm incapable of bullshit.
To featured roles in television, she voiced both main characters in the animated series The Boondocks.
Come on, Granddad. Me and Riley don't need no babysitter. We could take care of ourselves.
Yeah, it's not like we're gonna try to kill each other.
And played Detective Lydia Adams in the crime drama Southland.
I don't like the fact that if this girl was found in an alley in Brentwood, this would be front page news.
King also won a Critics' Choice Award for HBO's The Leftovers, 2 Emmys for ABC's American Crime, and she's an Emmy nominee for playing a grieving mother in the Netflix series 7 Seconds. And she joins us now from NPR West near Los Angeles. Regina King, welcome to 1A.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Thank you for making time for us. Is there a common thread between all the different parts that you take? You know, when you select a role, are there certain kinds that you have always gravitated towards or always passed on?
No, I wouldn't say that there's certain kinds that I've always gravitated to, but I would say that I always gravitate to things that are interesting to me. And I think that would be the common thread, that even if the final product wasn't exactly what I expected or was something that I was anticipating, initially it was something that I thought was an interesting story.
You've been in the business for some time now. Are there any particular changes that you've seen in the last few years that kind of stand out the most to you?
Yes. I mean, I think we are starting to see more roles where you have female characters that are more layered, that aren't just someone's wife or just someone's mother, but just more complicated as human beings actually are. So I feel like we're starting to see more of that. And I also feel like we're starting to see more roles that that are played by women of color, and the character doesn't have anything to do with their color. And it's slow, but I am seeing it.
You said in an interview with Vulture back in 2015 that after Boys in the Hood, you saw, quote, that I was being stereotyped. A lot of us were. I didn't want to be part of that. That's not the narrative I was creating for myself, unquote. What kind of narrative did you feel was being created for you? And what kind of narrative did you want to create?
Well, I felt like what was being created for me was a girl in the hood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because after that, I felt like mother and wife was what I was falling into, and being asked to play consistently. And I think, you know, I look at it two ways. Part of it, I look at it as a compliment that perhaps I've done, my performance was believable enough or strong enough that people believe you to be that person and perfect to play that mother or play this girl in the hood. I just, again, back to what we were first speaking about, the narrative I wanted for myself was just a passionate artist that honors the art that I was chosen to share. So that's the narrative, and I think that's the narrative that I'm creating.
Now, I know that you did not want to be stereotyped as a girl in the hood, but my first recollection of your work was as Brenda on 227, who was a girl who kind of lived in the hood. So, but yeah. it's a different kind of character. I understand what you mean in that kind of like boys in the hood way, as opposed to like, oh, here is a girl and she lives in a neighborhood. So I think a number of people recognize you from that sitcom on NBC. Here is a clip from 1985 of Regina King as Brenda in 227.
I had a nice time, but I think we ought to wait on the kids.
Sure.
How long?
Until we both feel it's right.
Right. I guess I won't get a night, huh? I understand. Good night.
Good night. Mom, you can come out now.
Regina King as Brenda on 227. Talk about how that role came about and what you were expecting from it, if anything.
Oh, gosh. First of all, just hearing my voice. Just...
Are you okay? Was that a little too real?
Well, I mean, you know, I heard a little of Huey and Riley in there.
You know, I was trying not to. We'll get to Huey and Riley in a minute. We have plenty of people who have written in like, all I can hear is Huey and Riley from Huey and right. Riley from Boondocks. But we'll get to them in a second.
Yeah, it's fun. Oh, yeah, we'll get to that in a second. That came to be 227 was actually a stage play before it was a television show written by Christine Houston. And I actually played a character named Sweetie in the stage play who lived around the corner from the building of 227. And when Marla and Christine sold it to NBC to become a show, everyone that was in the stage play had the opportunity to audition for a role that, you know, was close to if you fit the character description. So there was the role of Brenda, Mary's daughter. So I auditioned for that, and I think it was something insane, like 8-9 auditions later, I was shooting the pilot of 227.
Did you get the sense that the country kind of got what 227 was really about? I remember watching that show in the 80s and feeling like people were paying a little bit too much attention to Jack A. Harry's role, Sandra Clark, the kind of, you know, the one who kept talking about Mary. Like, I feel right. like she kind of overshadowed the show, and 227 was about more than that. Do you feel like people kind of got what you were trying to say then?
You know, I don't know. I think I was too young to even be thinking about it that deep. You know, I think I was 13, I think, when we did the pilot, so 14 once it actually went to series. So I was just at that point just trying to represent teenagers and what I know and what I felt like I wasn't seeing. You know, I didn't really see me on TV that often. You know, there were a few shows, but not many. So just like that, the girl that I know, the girl that I am, the young girl that actually has a mother and father in the home. I do remember like thinking that when I was a teen doing the show that this is not something you see often, seeing this family that is a middle class family that is not poor, not rich, but they're just some Americans, you know, loving each other and trying to follow their dreams. And I did feel that. I felt like that was very great to be a part of.
It seems like a number of the shows that people know you the most for, at least that folks have been commenting to us the most for, have been more ensemble programs than what you might consider like a star vehicle kind of show. Even 7 Seconds, which got you this latest Emmy nomination, is a very ensemble-focused show. You know, the episodes spend at least as much time with characters like KJ, the assistant district attorney, or Pete, the police officer, as they do with your character, Latrice. I wonder how being in those ensemble shows has kind of worked for you.
Well, I will say that that is a choice. I very early on, when my son was about 9 years old, you know, I made the decision to not take projects that were outside of LA because I didn't want to miss out on any of those life moments that happen when your child is growing. And at that time, it kind of meant that if I was going to do that, that meant that my movie career was going to have to like go on the back burner. So I had not done TV since 227 almost, other than like Like, I think I did like a little quick thing on the show called Northern Exposure, and I think I did something like on Living Single. So it was a choice to not only find something to do that shot in L.A., but that did not take up all my time, because my agents were very clear with me that, well, you know, shows that have that are an ensemble, you'll be able to work two or three days in a week and then have the other days off. Some weeks you might end up being a 5-day week, but you won't have to be there all day and defeat the purpose of the reason why you're going to TV anyway.
Right.
So that was something that was explained to me, you know, early on. And that's how 24, how I came to be on 24. My manager reached out to Joel and let them know that I wanted to do TV. And they were like, oh, wow. And so they created that character for me.
That was that a difficult decision to go for the ensemble thing as a way to devote more attention to your family? What was that thought process like? Or was it just kind of an easy, like, okay, this is done, I'm doing this?
Well, it was difficult to make the decision of not traveling out of the city anymore, because, you know, you're getting offers for things that really are of interest to you, but I just was very clear that I wanted to be, you know, home. So once that decision was made and I had not done TV in so long, and when I'm being explained what the landscape of TV is and looks like, I mean, to be honest, I wasn't even really watching TV at that time. So I just trusting the team that I had been with for so long and that had supported my choices as an actor for so long, that had been putting it, reaching out to producers and studios when scripts would come that were written for a white woman, and, you know, putting my name in the hat for that role. So they had done such a wonderful job, in my opinion, with honoring me as an actor and not just a black actor.
Right.
I trusted them.
With regards to that, Layla asks, can she talk about the business decision she's made to stay working and relevant for so long as a black woman actress?
The business decision.
I wonder maybe if by way of, if just by example, you talked about the team that's around you and the way that they view
right,
the kind of
just right.
roles. I'm guessing
yes.
there were probably people you had to surround yourself with, to distance yourself from, certain mm-hmm. circles you had to either run in or create for yourself to create the pipelines that would get you where you needed to go, because they don't just exist in Hollywood.
Right.
It didn't.
Yes. Well, Layla, I think you hit me with that question at the time that I was actually kind of speaking on it. So, yes, I feel for myself that remaining loyal to those that are loyal to me has just allowed me to navigate these industry waters in a way that, when times probably when it felt like the water was a little choppier, I always had that great team that's helping to sail the ship. You know, I have been with the same agent and manager for 20 years.
Wow.
20 plus. Yeah. A little over 20 years, because my son is 22. So I really feel like keeping that open and honest dialogue with each other has definitely been the reason why I've been able to sustain. And then my family, you know, I'm very close to my mother and my sister and my grandmother, and she's not with us anymore, but my cousins, and just people that, you know, if something's not right, they will let you know.
Yeah.
Even if it's not right in your actions.
Yeah.
You know, family that's never been afraid of sharing exactly what they feel about you or the situation. And I think that's been a big part of it as well.
We've talked a lot about the Me Too movement in Hollywood and how the industry is slowly beginning to acknowledge the disparate treatment that men and women receive in the business. Do you feel like Hollywood is making it easier, is making significant steps in dealing with the issues that female talents and executives have brought up? Is it easier these days to be a woman in Hollywood?
I don't know that it's easier. I think that now we're at a space where in a place in time that the conversation is out there and it's in the light. It's not talked about just amongst other women behind closed doors or when they're just feeling safe. I feel like we're in a space now that the safety goes. It's in front of the camera, and, right. And that's important. So I think we will see a difference.
Enhanced Vibes writes, from 227 to American Crime, I have enjoyed Regina King and everything she has done. My favorite role of hers, though, will always be her detective on Southland. Beverly Hill writes, you nailed the role of Fiona's parole officer on Shameless. I worked in parole and probation for many years. Your portrayal was completely authentic. Monica writes, my Shiro. She is a phenomenal actor. I love everything she does. Thank you for not staying in the box that others create for you. And October's Finest tweeted, just praise. Every time I hear her voice, all I think about is the Boondocks. I have to admit, when you said, thank you, glad to be here, I was like, she sounds a little more Huey than Riley right now. But Riley's a very distinct voice. Here is a quick clip of Huey and Riley going back and forth about the nature of the opposite sex in an episode of The Boondocks.
I don't see what the big deal is with hoes anyway.
Riley, all women are not hoes. We're talking 20, 25% tops.
Okay. But if they not all hoes, then why I got to pay to take them out to eat then?
A clip from the Boondocks. Regina, how did you come to be involved in Boondocks?
Oh, so much fun. I miss those boys.
I'll bet, yeah.
I actually auditioned for Riley. And after I got the part of Riley, Aaron was trying to find Huey.
Aaron Magruder, the series creator.
Aaron Magruder, yes, the great Aaron Magruder. He was trying to find an actor, actress or actor for Huey. And I don't know if a lot of people know, but a lot of times with voices that are boys, a lot of the voices are women because our voices don't change. Whereas if you actually hired a boy, there's a good possibility that the voice is going to change. So I did not know that.
This includes shows like The Simpsons. Nancy Cartwright has played Bart Simpson since the show began.
Yes, right. Yes. And I didn't know that. And Aaron shared that with me after I'd gotten the part of Riley. So I was auditioning. I would read Riley with several different performers during that audition process. And I would say a few months went by and they hadn't found Huey. And I told Aaron, well, you know, let me audition for Huey. You know, I've been listening to your notes and listening to the things that you want and the cadence that you're looking for. Just, you know, give me a shot. So I went in and auditioned for Huey. And as you hear, Huey's voice is more like mine. It's just kind of me changing the cadence, you know, like taking breaths in places that a kid would take breath. You know, when kids speak, they breathe and pause in different places than you do as an adult. And so, yeah, that's how it worked out. And in the audition, they asked me, what did I think I could go back and forth between Huey and Riley? So I said, I'll give it a shot. And I did in the audition. And I think that also helped solidify it. I think Aaron thought that brothers kind of sound similar anyway. You know, if you talk to my sister, Raina, depending on who picks up the phone, you may not know who's who.
Right.
And we're 4 years apart, so I think that that worked out in my favor.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. And for those who don't know, we should say Huey is 10 years old in the show. Riley is 8. They're two brothers who move from Chicago to a suburb called Woodcrest to live with their granddad and try to keep them out of trouble, with which they meet mixed success. I hear Boondocks compared to another show for a number of reasons, and Chris touched on that in his email. Chris writes, what are Ms. King's thoughts on the controversy surrounding Aaron Magruder's removal from the production of the final season of The Boondocks and the comparison to Dave Chappelle leaving his show, feeling the work was propagating stereotypes instead of critiquing them through the show's satire? Regina?
You know, I feel like that was just all of that was just a very unfortunate situation. And because of that situation, I don't know that it's ever a possibility for Boondocks to come back for anyone that's like just sent that question. I'm answering that one now.
Mm-hmm.
It happens so often in filmmaking and TV making that the powers that be and the creators have different opinions. And I know that it was very, very difficult for Aaron. I know that it was very difficult for others that were involved who also had to exit the situation. And I know that it was difficult for Sony to for it to end that way. I mean, that was a show that potentially could have never ended because... Wow, could you just imagine Boondocks now?
Well, that's what another one of our listeners alluded to. Chris tweeted, I've always wanted to know what Regina King and the Freeman boys, Huey and Riley Freeman, thought about Trump after the election. We got Huey's view on Barack Obama in season 3. What about today? So it sounds like, Regina, what you're saying is that the creative and business differences are too great for Boondocks to come back, that it's going to have to exist as a time capsule of its time, and then somebody else going to have to pick up the baton from here.
Yeah, I mean, I always try to say never, but I think there's so much legal stuff involved with that, you know, and who owns what, and it's just unfortunate. But Aaron was, I think, very honest about his role in it, you know, times when I would speak to him, and he just... he needed to exit that situation so his soul could be right.
Right.
And after that, you know, Aaron went on to have twins and then another child. And it just kind of, it's interesting how the universe works that way. You know, he and his wife were trying before that. And then after that situation removed itself from his world, other things opened up.
Well, I would say for those of you who've never seen The Boondocks, just go watch the Martin Luther King episode.
Yeah.
Just watch that one. That was my first episode of Boondocks. That was my introduction.
Was it really?
Yes. I saw that the night it came out. I was here in D.C. with a room full of 30 brothers, and the whole room got quiet. And we watched the episode, and I was shook. I was not ready to see what I saw, but it was... If you've never seen Boondocks, just go watch the Martin Luther King episode, and all of your black friends will thank you for it. Trust me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about your current work, your latest role in the Netflix drama 7 Seconds. It's a limited series that tells the story of Brenton Butler, who is a black teenage boy who is killed in a hit and run by a police officer who is white. Now, Regina King plays Latrice Butler, Brenton's mother. It's the role for which she earned her 4th Emmy nomination. Here is a piece of Regina King's performance. This is Latrice confronting the officer who ran over her son and left him to die.
I've been waiting for this moment for a long time. I thought I'd want to see you in handcuffs. See them drag you through the streets to pay for what you did to my son, but right now, just want to know if he was scared, if he was in pain, if he called out for me. I need to know what those last minutes were for him.
Regina King as Latrice Butler in 7 Seconds. What is it like to kind of deal with a role that heavy as an actor? This character's dealing with a lot of anger and a lot of grief. How do you channel that as an actor and not have it kind of drown you?
Whew-wee. I mean, it was a heavy 6 months shooting that show, I will say. Honestly, because of, I've been asked that question, and the answer still hasn't changed. You know, sometimes you're asked something, and then when you're asked again, you've been able to think about it a little bit more, mm-hmm. and so your answer may shift a bit. I feel like a lot of that was in me because of the relationship between the Black community and the police growing up, that we had growing up. And that was very extra sensitive for me having a son, and just the fears and concerns that I've always had regarding police violence once my son became a teenager. Because honestly, I don't think I really, you're thinking about so many other things as you're raising a child. And then that moment comes for Black parents, especially Black parents of sons, that you realize that, oh, wow, yeah, now I've got to start having a more in-depth conversation about him and about how others may regard him. Mm-hmm. So I think all of those things are inside most Black people that I know. You know, there is a space within us that we have experienced police violence in some type of way, whether it was personally or through a third party, you know, someone else's experience. And so I think a lot of that was always in there. So that was unleashed.
Well, there's also another Black cultural thread in the series, which has to do with Latrice and the Butlers and their relationship with God. Let's play one more clip in the time we have left. This is Latrice in a confrontation with Pastor Adler, who's played by Ron Canada, from 7 Seconds.
God didn't run my son down in the street and leave him to die. A man did that.
Latrice, I've seen a lot of people through this sort of thing. It's rough. But the ones who come out of it, who keep their heads above water, they lean into him.
I was in that church singing his praises while my son was dying in a ditch. Oh, lean? You want me to lean? I never prayed for anything harder in my life than for my son to live. All the while, somebody else was praying for him to die. So I'm done praying to a God who answers a murderer over a mother.
That was a pretty strong scene, Regina, to include, and very different from what we typically see for how Black families deal with tragedy in dramas that revolve around them and their faith.
Yes, very different, but also very real, you know, and I applaud Vina Sood, the creator of the show, and the writers for digging in deep. That's one of the things I think that was fascinating about the role of Latrice, is that while just when you just give a description of the character, a woman who's lost her child to a police cover-up, but that she's so much more than that. And I appreciated that in that Vina was able to find this woman and this couple that did not have the perfect relationship.
Right.
That while they were this God-fearing couple, they had troubles within their relationship. And those things don't go away just because this tragedy has occurred. And, you know, how do you explain that to your heart? And to see this woman, struggle with that is something that a lot of people who are religious, especially, you know, in the Black community, that are religious in the Black community feel but don't speak about because right. It's blasphemous in some way.
I know we got to let you go in a moment. I know you've got some new projects coming up. You've got the upcoming drama If Beale Street Could Talk, which is based on the novel by James Baldwin. Barry Jenkins, who directed Moonlight, is directing this also. And Bill had a question about another project that's coming up, which I'll ask you before we let you go. Bill asks, is there anything Regina can tell us about her upcoming role on the new Watchmen series on HBO?
I wish I could, Bill. Oh, I can't wait to be able to, but I will say this. We are in this alternate universe is such a strong word, but alternate space. Right. And I think it is going to be, again, another opportunity for Damon to have provocative storytelling, but have moments that make you go,
Okay. Because fans of the graphic novel watched the movie and walked away feeling a little flat. So we're looking forward to the series.
I would hope that that's not how you feel.
Regina King, Emmy-winning and Emmy-nominated actress. Her latest project is 7 Seconds on Netflix. Regina, we appreciate you sharing your stories with us, and thanks very much for talking to us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, really.
This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.